Welcome, everyone, to Policy Perspective. This is a podcast produced by the Children's Education Alliance of Missouri. Today is November 13th, 2012. I'm Peter Franzen. I'm the Director of Development with the Children's Education Alliance, and I'm joined today by Lisa Clancy, our program manager. There's Lisa. Hi, Lisa. How are you?
Good.
Good. Hey, listen, we also have on the phone today Amanda Henry. Welcome, Amanda.
Good afternoon.
So Amanda is a Teach for America alum, and she is currently enrolled at SLU in a dual degree program. It's a dual MBA and MA in educational leadership. Did I get that right, Amanda?
Yes.
Awesome. Well, Amanda, tell us a little bit about yourself. Today we're going to talk about teacher evaluation, and you're a former teacher, and I know that you're studying now to go back into education. This program that you're in is actually a full-time program. You're not able to be in the classroom right now. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
All right. So, tell us a little bit about yourself, Amanda. How did you get to TFA?
Well, for the past 4 years, I was teaching at a St. Louis public school, Jefferson Elementary School, which is located in downtown St. Louis, and I taught special education. My class sizes varied over the course of my 4 years. I started with only 3 students in my class all day, and then I had some other students coming in anywhere from an hour a day to 3 hours a day for a resource, just extra help in reading and math or whatever their needs may be. And by the time I left, I had more than 15 students with me all day, and then I had a variety of other students coming in from anywhere, again, from an hour a day to 3 hours a day. And over the course of my experience working with children with special needs, it became very clear to me that some of the evaluation methods that we utilize in St. Louis public schools and throughout the state of Missouri were not really adequately depicting the progress that my students in particular were making, as well as the students throughout the entire school.
Well, tell us more about that. What was your experience with that? What happened?
Well, the typical evaluation process in St. Louis public schools and in other public schools throughout the state is that a teacher will have one formal evaluation and one or two informal evaluations every year. So the formal evaluation starts with the teacher sitting down with the principal and identifying some key target areas for improvement. So things that you specifically want the principal to watch out for, whether it's classroom management or if the students are on task or if you are developing activities in the classroom that directly address the goals of the lesson. So the principal will take notes on those things, and then she will schedule a time with the teacher to come in and observe. This makes it very easy for teachers to plan a really rock star lesson for that hour that the principal is coming into their classes with no guarantee that that's actually what's happening for the remainder of the day.
But Amanda,
so that
let me
itself is frustrating.
Well, let me just interrupt you for a second. So do they have to, what do you mean when you say that they let you know that they're coming in? They don't have to let you know that they're going to come in and observe the class, do
they? They do for the formal observation, yes. So that is a scheduled time.
Is that
the informal observations, they don't. But that, again, only happens once or twice.
Is that a requirement of the school district, or how is it that they can't just pop in on you?
They can, but for the formal evaluation, because the teacher is supposed to be an active participant in the observation process, they want it to be scheduled so that she can say, you know, here's what my lesson plan is. I want to see if I'm actually aligning my lesson to the classroom activities or whatever the goals are that they determine together are something that the teacher needs to work on.
I see. Okay, so.
Well, I was just going to ask you, Amanda, was this the same procedure each year that you were teaching? Was this the same evaluation process you went through your first year as was your fourth year?
Yes, it was the same. I will say, though, that because of the multitude of other things that our principal was dealing with on any given day, with people coming in from the state to observe us and different things like that, there were times when an observation would be scheduled and no one would come into my room. Also, there were times when informal observations were happening throughout the week. Our TLF, which is our teaching and learning facilitator, would say, you know, I'm going to try to get into as many classrooms as possible. And over the course of the year, I would say my principal was in my room observing twice, and I never saw the TLF in my room any of my 4 years. That's particularly alarming to me as one dealing with students with special needs. I would think that there would be an increased need to come in and observe and make sure that things are moving smoothly, especially when we are trying to get these students mainstreamed and getting them back in the regular classroom and helping them to deal with the behavioral issues and other things through behavior intervention plans. But when no one is in there observing and seeing what's going on, then it's really difficult to make that transition.
Right. Okay. Well, what would, so headed down that path a little bit further, what are your thoughts about this? I mean, you're in a an education leadership program now. You're looking ahead, presumably, to the future of maybe being a principal or certainly being in a position of educational leadership. What is your take on this whole evaluation process, the way you experienced it, and what are your ideas about how it might actually be more useful?
In my opinion, the education observation and teacher evaluation system needs to be completely overhauled. There's really no real way to ensure that what's going on in the classroom is leading to student success or student growth. And just coming in and observing on a checklist and checking whether or not the Blackboard configuration is correct and checking whether or not students are on task is not really getting at the crux of the issue, which is, are these students progressing? Are they showing some progress? In my classes that I'm taking right now and in my experience in the classroom, combining that all together, I think it's very clear that we need value-added measures added to the evaluation process in some capacity.
Well, now there's that word again, value-added. I see Lisa was about to speak up. Lisa,
well, I was just going to say, tell us what, I mean, that I think that can sound sort of like a scary policy jargony term. What does value-added measure mean? Give us the civilian definition.
Really, basically, at the most basic level, what value added means is that it's taking a look at where the students in a classroom start out and where they end up throughout the year. So, for example, in my classroom, again, working with students with cognitive and behavioral disabilities, looking at where they started. So if I have a student who's in fifth grade and they start reading at a first grade level, then clearly by the end of the school year, even if they've moved up to a fourth grade level, they're still quote unquote behind and not at grade level. However, what value-added measure allows is for us to take a snapshot look at where that student started and where they finished and say, yes, look at the progress that they made. That is significant progress. They've made significant gains, and that's something to celebrate. That's something that we should be proud of. So value-added helps not only the teachers show that they've made progress, particularly with students who start out so far behind, but it also encourages the student by celebrating the progress that they've been able to make and saying, here's where you started and here's where you've ended up. That would look in an evaluation setting would just be including some of that data in the conversation that's happening between teacher and principal during their evaluation process. So saying, here's the evidence to show that my students are making progress. It's not just about coming in the room and seeing if everything looks good, but it's mostly about what's really happening with each individual student. Are they making gains? Are they growing in the classroom?
Right. You know, your story actually is very familiar to me because I was also a self-contained special education teacher. And I used a test called the NWEA, which I used to track growth of my students, you know, at the beginning, middle, and end of the school year. And that really was only used for internal purposes, but I mean super internal purposes, like just in my classroom and not really something that was considered by those who are evaluating me. So I think that's a really good point you bring up. And I think it's interesting, too, because we hear a lot about, I think educators and policymakers alike can agree that we need to change the way teachers are evaluated. But we get bogged down in, you know, what are the best ways to do that? And I think you bring up an important point that growth is something that needs to be considered and be part of this in a way that it's not
now. Absolutely.
Now, Amanda,
I think it's very important to make a distinction, though, between value-added measure and looking at just the test scores. Those are very different things, and a lot of people get confused about that. And it's important to note that value-added measure is not looking at how many of your students are proficient or advanced. It's looking at growth that student has made throughout the year. I think that's a very important distinction to make.
Right. And so from my experience as a teacher, what that looked like for me was that one of my students was able to transition out of my self-contained classroom into classes with his peers for 2 hours a day, which that in itself was tremendous growth, not measured by a test score, but very important and a big accomplishment for him.
So then my question is, it still sounds like it needs some kind of – so what is the measure then, you know, Amanda, what it still sounds like there must be some test ability, score, observation, something that tells you whether or not the student has progressed. I mean, there's still testing involved.
Well, our school did a variety of different tests throughout the year that we could use as data to support that the students were growing. A lot of schools use the DRA, which is the Developmental Reading Assessment. So students start out at the beginning of the year and they're scored on what grade level they're reading at, and then hopefully at the end of the year they've shown growth in that area. There's the acuity test, which is something specific to St. Louis Public Schools, which is a benchmarking test that's given 3 times a year. And even teacher-made assessments. If you're in a school that is really encouraging collaboration among teachers and understanding by design and all of these different things, having a teacher-made assessment that's been assessed to be valid and reliable, then you can even show growth through that measure. And I would like to say, though, just for a specific example from my classroom, I worked with my students in small groups to prepare for the MAP test, which is the big kind of assessment that every child in Missouri takes. And my students were separated into different groups, and we worked really hard at looking at what the question is really asking us to do. And all of the students started out in the below basic range on the MAP test. By the time that we had finished our MAP power hours, what we called it, and we actually took the test, when we got our test scores back, we found that all of my students had improved by at least 100 points. A couple had 75, but a lot of them had improved very significantly. And while that still might have placed them in the basic range, still not in the proficient or advanced where we would like them to be, that significant growth that were we to have value-added measures would validate that student instead of saying, well, you're still below basic or you're still basic, that's not good enough. We're not encouraging our students in that way. We're not building up that confidence that's so necessary to success in the classroom. And value-added measures allow that to happen. They allow us to take a look at progress instead of the end result. It's not about where you end up, it's about the journey that you've taken and how far you've come. And I think that's what's so special about adding value-added measures into the evaluation process.
Now, Amanda, there's, working around education, we certainly hear a lot about the extra challenges that seem to be inherent or part of the work involved when you're working with at-risk students, schools with really particularly high poverty levels. Does the value-added measure, any more or less helpful? Is it equally helpful across the board? Does it somehow negatively impact districts that deal with a lot of at-risk students?
Actually, I think for dealing with at-risk students, it's particularly helpful, once again, because it doesn't come back down to the raw score. It comes down to looking at each student individually and recognizing and acknowledging the progress that they've made. With students who are at risk, speaking specifically to the school that I've been working in, a lot of our students come to us with already significantly behind same-age peers in other schools in St. Louis, and it's very difficult to get them back on track in light of everything, all of the other noise that's going on in their lives, all of these other issues that they deal with. And I think value-added measures allow us to recognize that growth and be excited about it and use that as kind of a trajectory to get that student moving forward, to build that momentum, to say, look at how far you've come, look at what you can accomplish when we really set our minds to it. Particularly for teachers who are working with students with special needs, I think it's a great way to show not only the student how much they're progressing, but also to show the principal and district leaders to say, these students might be diagnosed with special needs, but look at the progress that they're making, look at how far they can come. Again, that does depend on the disability of the child, but at the same time, I had students ranging from ADHD or behavior type disorders, and then I had students with autism or cognitive impairments, and across the board, my students were able to show progress, and when I was able to chart that and use my data to explain where my students started and where they had come, every student had grown. Now, while they might still be below grade level, I think that, again, it's something to celebrate when students are growing and developing and learning, and that's really what value-added measures do.
Right, definitely. Now, you know, we've talked a lot about how this can benefit students. Is it fair to use this concept, to use value-added as a way to understand how adults, how teachers are performing their jobs in the classroom? Is that is it helpful there as well?
Oh, absolutely. I think what makes teaching such an interesting profession is you look at other professions that deal with social services, like physicians, doctors, lawyers. And if a doctor goes in and operates on a patient, no matter where that patient comes from, no matter what that patient's background, the doctor's responsibility is to heal that patient. The same with a lawyer. No matter what that client's background might be, no matter where that client comes from, it is the lawyer's job to defend that client. Yet somehow our society has gotten confused with teachers and saying, well, this student comes from this background, or this student is of this socioeconomic status, and therefore we don't have to work as hard. And I think that that's really a travesty in the teaching profession. No matter where a student comes from or what their background is, we should be held responsible for the progress that they're making. And so for me, being a teacher and wanting to get into school leadership, there's no excuse. If your students aren't progressing, then you're not doing your job, and teachers need to be held accountable for that. We can't just put it on the back burner and blame the circumstances in that child's life, because other industries don't do that. We're a professional industry, and we need to act like professionals and accept that it is our responsibility to move these students forward no matter where they started. And that's what, again, is so great about value-added measure, because there's something to say when you are evaluating a teacher or when you're talking about tenuring a teacher, saying, where is the progress? I need to see progress from the majority, if not all, of the students in your classroom. And if you're not seeing that, then why should a teacher be allowed to stay in that classroom if they're not working to move forward all of their students?
Right. And I think you bring up a good point, too, that, you know, we need to work a little harder. Or teachers need to work a little harder, and especially, you know, for kids that need us the most.
Exactly.
Well, I think we're probably going to leave it there. Amanda, that was a very interesting insight from you, from your personal experience. And Lisa, if people want to get a hold of you, is Twitter probably the easiest way to do that?
Yes,
What's your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is Lisa D. Clancy, all one word.
At Lisa D. Clancy.
At Lisa D. Clancy.
Right, and if you want to get a hold of me, mine is at Peter A. Franzen, F-R-A-N-Z-E-N. And if you just want to follow us and find out what's happening in education reform, you can follow the organization. It is at SEAM. Those are our initials, C-E-A-M, at SEAM Official. Amanda, I know you've blogged for us for our website before. We hope you do that again. We really appreciate you joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
And good luck on the program at SLU as well.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Amanda.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks, bye-bye, everyone, for listening to this podcast today, and we'll look for you next time.